Okay, so we'll go back to verse 17 and read forward. Verse number 17. So, continue. The Ashwini Kumaras were very pleased to see Sukanya's chastity and faithfulness. Thus, they showed her Chaivan Muni, her husband. And after taking permission from him, they returned to the heavenly planets in their plane. Text 18. Thereafter, King Saryati, desiring to perform a sacrifice, went to the residence of Chaivan Muni. There he saw by the side of his daughter a very beautiful young man as bright as the sun. Text 19. After receiving obeisances from his daughter, the king, instead of offering blessings to her, appeared very displeased and spoke as follows. So the verse in purport. O unchaste girl, what is this that you have desired to do? You have cheated the most respectable husband, who was honored by everyone. For I see that because he was old, diseased, and therefore unattractive, you have left this company to accept as your husband this young man, who appears to be a beggar from the street. Wow. Getting accused pretty heavy, huh? She didn't do it. Purport. This shows the values of Vedic culture. According to the circumstances, Sukanya had been given a husband who was too old to be compatible with her. Because Chaivan Muni was diseased and very old, he was certainly unfit for the beautiful daughter of King Saryati. Nonetheless, her father expected her to be faithful to her husband. When he suddenly saw that his daughter had someone else, even though the man was young and handsome, he immediately chastised her as asati, unchaste, because he assumed that she had accepted another man in the presence of her husband. According to Vedic culture, even if a young woman is given an old husband, she must respectfully serve him. This is chastity. It is not because she dislikes her husband she may give him up and accept another. This is against Vedic culture. According to Vedic culture, a woman must accept the husband given to her by her parents and remain chaste and faithful to him. Therefore, King Saryati was surprised to see a young man by the side of Sukanya. End of purport. Om Agyan Timidandasya Gina Jana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapditam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Dadanti Swam Padantikam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Wow, I don't know how far this verse would go in modern society. It would be considered too revolutionary, especially the purport. But this is actually, what has happened, or appears to be happening, is not what actually is happening. She's been accused of accepting another husband and replacing her previous husband, who was very qualified, great sage, all good qualities. She's young. The sage is very invalid, old, diseased. But at the same time, a great soul. Her father is, you might say, he jumped to conclusions. But it seemed natural that he would respond to that. So here it gives a little clarity on the principles of chastity. This could be applied in many ways, but here, specifically within the marriage, it has a very, what we say, valuable principle that maintains the success of the marriage, and that is faithfulness and chastity towards one's spouse. In this particular situation here, Prabhupada kind of doesn't give any compromise. Of course, in Bhagavatam never compromises. Bhagavatam gets right to the essence of everything. And the essence in this particular situation is that despite the material situations, arrangements, or whatever, divorce is not even considered. I remember when I was growing up as a young boy in America, it was very rare, extremely rare, to meet anyone who had been divorced. My parents would never even think of that, although they would, you know, get into some pretty heavy fights sometimes. And, you know, I would see that. But they would never, the word divorce didn't even enter into their minds. And I think in the whole school I went to, hundreds and hundreds of kids, I think there was one person who had a parent who was divorced. And there used to be a TV show that was a novelty. It was called Divorce Court. They would find someone who got divorced and make a little story out of it, and that became a TV show. Now they can make a spectacular out of it. Everybody gets divorced nowadays, right? It's rare you see marriages stay together. Society has changed drastically in the last 50, 60 years, tremendously, with the advent of technology and so many other forms of communication and material opulences. You know, it seems to people have become less personal and more into things instead of what we say relationships. And values have taken the side as, you know, optional. Whatever we feel like doing, if it seems to be the best thing, then we'll do that. It's not so much based on what we say righteous. It's, you know, if it feel good, do it, right? So we see here a situation where Prabhupada, he says that the faithfulness and chastity of a woman is actually the quality that makes her glorious. A woman is known as for her chastity and faithfulness to her husband. I was just reading Prabhupada a couple days ago. He said, if the man is qualified and the woman is chaste and faithful, the home is like Vaikuntha. That's the word he used. He didn't say heaven, he said Vaikuntha. So he was giving a little understanding how important and how spiritually powerful such mood of cooperation and culture is foundational to the success of the relationship and to the practice of spiritual life. But it's very rare we see that. So even if the husband, here, you can see the father, and the father can see that at least from a material point of view, it was quite an odd relationship. He was old and she was young. And at the same time, you know, she was quite beautiful and he wasn't at all in that category. It looked kind of an odd relationship, but still the father thought that this would be the best for his daughter. And so he went ahead and, you know, made the marriage, and she was expected to accept that. She did, actually. She did. She actually did accept it. But somehow she got a blessing by the Aswini Kumaras. And through their power, they all are transformed into very beautiful personalities. And so the father could not recognize it. But therefore, his Prabhupada's purport is giving us a little bit of a clearer understanding what it means to be in a relationship. There's always difficulties, and there's always conflicts, there's always inebrities, differences. But what somehow or other balances the relationship up is not the so much the material adjustments, although that sometimes is considerable. It's the spiritual prowess of both within the practice of devotional service. It says that when two people work together to overcome difficulties in the marriage becomes stronger, or the relationship becomes stronger. Usually sometimes when difficulties become a little extreme, or apparently extreme, there's some reason to give up the relationship. Or sometimes even if people don't engage in divorce, they lose the enthusiasm to contribute to that relationship, and it becomes less actually, you know, a relationship. It becomes just like a, you know, two people living together just to carry out whatever they have to carry out. So this is the effects of this age. And we see, yeah, there were statistics in America and even statistics within the ISKCON society of such a high percentage of divorce. When Prabhupada was here, he made a sacrifice at the very beginning of the movement that usually is not done, which is, he was criticized for this sacrifice, but he knew this is the only thing that would work. And what was that? He played the part of the person who did the marriages for his young disciples. For a sadhu, for a sannyasi to do that is highly unheard of and seems to be a little bit against sannyas dharma. But Prabhupada knew there was no one else to do that, and he wanted to give blessings and benefits to his fledgling disciples who are brand new in the practice of Krishna consciousness. So he took that position of the priest in the marriage. And he did that for about 2-3 years. And then he gave it up. The reason he gave it up is because even though he was doing it, he felt that devotees were not taking their vows very seriously. Therefore he stopped out of disgust. He criticized the devotees for not staying together. And therefore, he said, I can't do this anymore. So, even within our society, there were so many problems. It's really hard to evaluate the situation according to a philosophical statement. But we have to go back to the principle that Krishna consciousness is above everything. And it made that transcendental focus on the principles of relationship and the duties in relationship to that transcendental focus is the foundation for overcoming difficulties and coming to a higher platform like that. So here, and it's interesting, not to be one-sided, but it, and here we see in Vedic culture that usually it's up to the woman to make the marriage work, generally. The man may be qualified or a little less qualified, but if she's qualified, she can change her husband. Therefore, in the fourth canto, Srila Prabhupada writes, in the purport, this is the story of Sati and Lord Shiva. In that discussion, Prabhupada talks about these same principles, and he says, marriages fall apart because of womanly weakness. If the woman is strong, she can change the man, she can make the difference. A man is supposed to be qualified, but she can make him qualified by her affection, by her chastity and by her service. But because training and culture, the culture is being introduced, but the training is still needs to be introduced, and therefore without specific training in that relationship, it becomes very strained. So, therefore, we find even in our ISKCON society such a high rate of separation and divorce, which is quite abominable when we think about it. I know you might think, well, he's a sannyasi. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He can be theoretical, but when it comes right down to the nitty-gritty, you know, you got to really experience, you know, the reality of married life before you can make such statements. But here, Prabhupada is giving the same principle that dislike or differences which come by way of material circumstances are not the cause for dissension or what we say disunity like that. Especially in this case with the marriage. So one has to be very, very, what we say, Krishna conscious. When you work in a relationship, it's the more Krishna consciousness you are, the more you can give to that relationship. So that's the basis of the thing. Because within the Krishna conscious perspective, as far as etiquette and conduct and also principles are concerned, all solutions of problems can be adjusted accordingly. So ultimately there's no reason for divorce. Unless, okay, we'll give a little clause here. Unless it's an extreme emergency case and there's no other possible solution that has been that can be adopted after trying so many other forms of solutions, then there can be some consideration like that. And Prabhupada also allowed that under extreme circumstances. But so therefore, he makes these points throughout the purports in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in many of the purports, especially in the third canto with Devahuti and Kardama Muni, look what she had to go through, Devahuti, in order to please her husband Kardama Muni. That's another mismatch, right? What to speak about today when there's so many mismatches? That's a real mismatch. She was a princess. As good, her mother was a queen. She was the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu. And she was a highly cultured, very wealthy, aristocratic lady who grew up in a very devotional family and had everything. She was like, you know, like Sita. She had all the opulences and at the same time very devotionally trained. But she married a yogi. And what was his? He wasn't interested in any of this stuff. He just wanted his meditation. But he wanted a child, so somehow or other Narada Muni arranged and he got married. And so she was accustomed to opulences and comfortable life. He was interested in living in a hermitage. But she pleased him. She went out of her way. I mean, really out of the way. She didn't even dress opulently anymore. She was eating very little. She became so skinny. She worked hard to please her husband. And when he saw that, he was greatly happy and pleased with her, that he created this aerial mansion and gave her all the opulences she gave up. And by his spiritual power, he gave her 9 daughters, along with a very qualified son, which was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kapila Muni. So this is an example of a perfect marriage, how when the woman goes out of her way to work with the husband, no matter what the dichotomy of the relationship, how the husband becomes inclined to please the wife as much as possible. So this is the psychology between men and women. I think we have to understand that. A man gets married so he can have someone who can assist him in his activities, and also he can express his emotional and needs, and also develop family life. And he is expected to be the one who provides the material arrangements. But the wife is expected to work with those material arrangements and create an environment which is like heaven for the husband. Haribol, sounds too phantasmagoria? Are we getting about above reality here? But when the training is there, and we see there is actually examples in the world today, when the training is there, then it becomes actually quite natural and quite easy. It says that even a woman who's married, she won't talk to another man. She won't. Only her husband. Of course, nowadays it's a little bit, let me say, impractical. It seems to be a little bit impractical. You know, but that's how chastity is actually understood in the real sense of the term. She won't even look at another man, what to speak of, talk to him. Of course, we are preaching in today's society, so the ladies are also preaching as much as the men, so they also go out like that. But we see what is the ideal. We should strive for the ideal, and somehow or other, even if we fall short of the ideal, that striving itself is success. The striving itself becomes actually the success of the endeavor. Because Krishna will empower that mood with, what we say, a situation which will be conducive to the happiness of both persons. Like that. So, here, of course, she remained chaste. She's also glorious. Sukanya is glorious. But her father doesn't see it at first. It'll come later. He's chastising her pretty heavy. Ooh, you ever been chastised when you haven't done the wrong thing? Somebody gets on your case, it has nothing to do with what you did or said. Have you ever had that experience? And you're just ready to punch a person, you know? You're ready to say something immediately, call your lawyer. It's like that, right? I know one devotee from New Vrindavan. He used to get constantly accused of things he never did. It was a series of things, one after another. He went to an astrologer just to find out why. The astrologer said, in your previous life, you were getting credit for things you didn't do. So this is the balance. Now he was getting accused for things he didn't do. So karma works like that. So, yeah. Sometimes in the relationship with the spiritual master is chastising. And for something you didn't do, or something you did do and you didn't, you're accused of not doing something. In other words, a wrong accusation. But what is the spiritual master doing? Is he wrong? No. He's just allowing you to develop humility, tolerance, patience, and developing the qualities. It's not like, well, Guru Maharaj, you know, give me a chance to explain here. You know, I know you're my guru, but you don't know everything. But if you sit there and just take the chastisement and become humble, the whole situation becomes, what we say, nice or profitable for both parties like that. Like, that's hard to do, right? Because the false ego is always ready to defend. Yeah, right? Wait a minute! Give me a chance to explain. So, you're like this. So, you know, it's like, it doesn't work. But I remember one situation where I was falsely accused, and I didn't say anything. But later on, the person who did apologized later for that, and I didn't, because I didn't say anything. It just somehow or other went on like that. I mean, in some cases, extreme cases, you may have to speak. But how we respond to a situation, Sukanya here, she actually smiles after being chastised. It's in two verses later. Jai Sisi Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai Gornitai Ki Jai. So she actually responds in a very, what we say, loving way. She doesn't take offense, or she doesn't, what we say, become very defensive, trying to explain. She waits till her father's done like that. Usually that's the best, that this is a type of tactic. If someone is accusing you, you wait till they're done, and then you say, okay, can I say no? And that diffuses the whole thing. As soon as you start to defend yourself, it becomes worse like that. So there's many interesting points here. We can talk more about the importance of chastity within the marriage. But we see in today's society there always are some circumstances, and those circumstances should be considered also. But chastity is the principle of glorification of a lady. Gandhari was so chaste that in order not to supersede her husband, she purposely accepted blindness by putting a cloth over her eyes, just to show her faithfulness and chastity and respect for her husband, Dhritarashtra, like that. So there's so many examples in Vedic culture like that. So if we can remember this, that a woman is the one that makes it or breaks it in the marriage, generally. Unless the man is a real dog, you know, like a bulldog. But usually devotees are okay. Even if the man is breaking the principles, somehow or other, by her strength and by her chastity and faithfulness, she can change him if she's determined. It may take a while like that. That's usually the case. So the woman has the power to usually make it or break it. And the husband, of course, he has his responsibility. He shouldn't shirk that or neglect that. But if he is, what we say, not too far off, it becomes doable by the woman's chastity and her determination like that. We have that example how Prabhupada tells this story. I don't remember the personality's names. Prabhupada does mention there was one very old man, and he had a very chaste wife. And this man had leprosy. But he was attracted to this prostitute. And this prostitute was, she was Haralakshi. She had, in other words, in order to get her favors and her activities, you had to pay so much gold, so much jewelry, so much precious diamonds. She was the top in terms of price. But this man who had leprosy, he didn't have much, but he was very attractive. And his wife knew it. So she wanted to please her husband. So what she did, she went to the prostitute and started to perform personal service to the prostitute very nicely, carefully. And then she opened up her heart when the prostitute asked, well, why? She said, because I have this husband, he's very much interested in you. Can you please accept him? He doesn't have the money. She said, okay. But she had a plan. She was very, what we say, intelligent. So the old man came, and she served him dinner when he first came. And she put the food in three different pots, or three different containers. One was a golden pot, one was a silver pot, and one was a leaf plate. You ready for this story? Okay. This will disillusion you about all the happiness of sex life. Okay. You want to get disillusioned that way? Okay. Just in case there's any illusion left. Brahmacharis don't have illusion, right? I hope not. So she put the same food in three different containers, leaf, silver, and gold. And he came, he sat down, and she served him like that. And he's looking at it and thinking, what is this? Why is she serving the same preparations in three different containers and offering it to me? So he had to speak. And he did. And he expressed his confusion. And she said, you have a wonderful wife, very chaste and faithful. It's all the same. It's all the same. Just go home. It's all the same. And he woke up like that. He understood that his wife had made the arrangement for him to come. And now he felt, what we say, changed. He gave up his desire, went back to his wife. Prabhupada tells that story that, you know, that people think that happiness can be found in the same way, but it's the same thing. It's the same thing. So this is material life. And this is material life. But Maya tells us something different, right? And that Maya is what keeps us, what we say, attached to the temporary in this material world. So therefore, one should strictly and carefully follow one's vows in Krishna consciousness. So much so that one's vows becomes one's focus in the practice of Krishna consciousness. And if we do that, we get the strength and we get the clarity to perform devotional service with enthusiasm. And that's important, like that. So, that's another point. It's not directly related to this story, but it has the same, what we say, understanding. That remaining within the marriage and staying faithful and chaste and responsible makes the marriage as good as Vaikuntha, as Prabhupada said. He told one Grihastha that there's no need to take sannyas. Just stay in Grihastha life and be an ideal Grihastha. He said that is good as the sannyas order. He said that. He said that is good as the sannyas order. If one is practicing Grihastha life according to the principles and is in, both persons are engaged in devotional service. So changing ashrams is only there when it's required for spiritual advancement. And that has to be carefully, what we say, evaluated and understood in relationship with seniors and not by one's own choice. Because if we somehow or other make all these choices based on our own understanding, we're likely to make a mistake. Or we're opening ourselves to a principle of fallibility. So therefore, advice from gurus, from seniors, from well-wishers in these situations is an insurance of success in ashram activities like that. And not surreptitiously or arbitrarily according to circumstances or according to whims even like that. Okay, so We can talk a lot about this because it's a very important subject, especially because in our Krishna consciousness society, what is the percentage? I'm not exactly sure, but it's very high. 85% of our devotees are grihasthas. 85-90%. Does anyone know? What is the percentage of grihasthas in our society as opposed to the brahmacharis and sannyasis? It must be at least 80 or 85%. Anybody know? No. 90%? 99? Whoa. That's a little. Maybe 98. I don't know about 99. I don't know if it's that high, but it's high. It might even be over 90. So these verses are really fundamental to the success of our ISKCON society. Okay, any questions, comments?